Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Tuesday, May 28th, 2019. Coming up this hour,
saber-rattling over the trade war shows no sign of slowing.
As Huawei enters the dispute, we speak exclusively with the company's CEO.
EU elections are in the books. Now European leaders fight over who leads the bloc.
And in the UK, it's a battle over who leads the march toward Brexit.
President Trump is returning to the White House after a state visit to Japan, plus nasty weather in the Midwest. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. The Mets road trip began with a loss to the Dodgers. The Yankee homestand started with a win over the Padres. The Stanley Cup final saw the Bruins beat the Blues.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak, brought to you by Insight, BNY Mellon Pershing's must-attend event for the financial advice community, June 12th through the 14th in Phoenix. If you haven't registered, visit BNYMelonInsight.com to register today.
And U.S. futures and stocks in Europe are falling this morning. 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down 6 points, Dow futures down 31, NASDAQ futures down 12. The DAX in Germany is down 0.5%, CAC in Paris down 0.6%, and the FTSE 100 down 0.1%. Nikkei 225 in Japan gained 0.3%, and so did the Hang Seng in Hong Kong. 10-year Treasury up 12/32nds, yield 2.27%, yield on the 2-year 2.13%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.5% or 32 cents to $58.96 a barrel. COMEX gold little changed at $12.89.30 an ounce. The euro at 1.1192 against the dollar and the yen 109.27. Nathan.
Well, Karen, the saber rattling over trade continues with President Trump signaling he is in no rush to reach a deal with China.
As far as China is concerned, they wouldn't make a deal. I think they probably wish they made the deal that they had on the table before they tried to renegotiate it. They would like to make a deal. We're not ready to make a deal.
The president, during his visit to Japan, touting billions of dollars in tariffs from China, while also saying he thinks a trade deal will eventually be had with Beijing.
Meanwhile, the CEO and founder of Huawei Technologies is striking a defiant tone in the face of U.S. sanctions. Ren Zhengfei spoke exclusively with Bloomberg through an interpreter from Huawei headquarters in Shenzhen.
If we were lagging behind, Trump wouldn't need to make so many efforts to attack us. He attacks us because we are now more advanced than them.
Ren says President Trump is attacking Huawei because of its success and strongly denies its devices and software are used for spying.
We absolutely would never install any backdoors. We would never do that.
The Huawei CEO also tells us he sees the possible U.S. blacklist of Huawei as, quote, a big joke.
I will ignore Trump. Then, with whom can he negotiate? If he calls me, I may not answer. But he doesn't even have my number. I see his tweets, and I think it's laughable, because they're self-contradictory.
Huawei CEO Ren Zhengfei, speaking exclusively to Bloomberg, says plans are in the place to survive a U.S. ban by using its own computer chips and operating system, though he deflected questions about how quickly those replacements could be ready.
While tensions continue to run high, stocks in Asia posted modest gains in today's session. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally joins us from Singapore with details. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. It was a third session of gains for the MSCI Asia Pacific Index. The Nikkei 225 gaining 0.4% in Tokyo. Elsewhere, Indian stocks swung from record highs amid signs of a slowing economy as the euphoria sparked by Modi's election win fades. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Julia, thank you. Turning to Europe now, mainstream EU parties held their ground against populists in last week's elections. Now the battle shifts to EU leaders deciding who leads the European Commission. Bloomberg's Maria Tadeo reports from Brussels.
European leaders will gather here and, in principle, the winner of the election, Manfred Weber, who is a German Christian Democrat and very closely aligned to Angela Merkel, should take the lead to become Commission President. But our reporting does show that it is not an easy situation and is by no means clear that he will become Commission President. And at the same time, what is becoming also increasingly obvious is that European leaders have not agreed on a name and they have not agreed on the system by which the next Commission president should be elected.
At today's summit in Brussels, EU leaders are also deciding who heads up the European Central Bank, with President Mario Draghi finishing his term in October.
EU election results are also leaving politicians in Britain under pressure when it comes to Brexit. Bloomberg's Sebastian Salek joins us live from London with that. Good morning, Sebastian.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. Well, both of Britain's main parties are grasping for answers after taking a beating at the hands of the Brexit Party. Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn grudgingly promised to support a referendum on any deal to leave the EU. His party sank to just 14% of the vote. Meanwhile, leading Conservatives competing to replace Theresa May said their party's near wipeout in the poll showed angry voters wanted them to get on and quit the bloc. Live in London, I'm Sebastian Salek, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Sebastian, thank you. Meanwhile, in Germany, it looks like all options are on the table for Deutsche Bank. Bloomberg's John Tucker joins us live with the details. Good morning, John.
And good morning, Karen. Sources say Deutsche Bank is considering a capital raise as part of a wider overhaul. It's a move that could trigger a backlash from investors in light of Deutsche Bank's low stock price. A capital increase may be needed to fund substantial cuts to the investment bank, which has long been one of the biggest headaches for the CEO, Christian Sewing. He's signaled deep cuts as the lender struggles to make a profit, frustrating shareholders who saw the stock hit a record low last week. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thanks. In Hong Kong, Bloomberg News has learned Alibaba Group's considering raising $20 billion via a second listing. Bloomberg's Tom McKenzie has more from Beijing.
We know that they're working with their financial planners, according to our sources, to look at a potential listing in Hong Kong in the second half of 2019. Now, we've been warned that these plans are still, of course, preliminary, and they could ultimately change. But we've heard that they want to raise additional liquidity. They want to diversify their funding channels. And another reason is that, quite simply, Chinese companies are facing a very hostile, of course, increasingly hostile U.S. government.
In addition to raising capital, an offering in Hong Kong could have the benefit of tightening Alibaba's ties with Beijing.
And here in the U.S., we have another mega merger in the payment industry. Sources tell Bloomberg Global Payments has agreed to buy Total System Services in a deal valued at $21.5 billion. The all-stock transaction set to be announced this morning. This is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. It's 5:07 on Wall Street. Time now to check the latest world and national news with Bloomberg's Michael Barr. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. President Trump returns to Washington today following a state trip to Japan.
This has been a truly amazing and unforgettable visit to Japan.
Bloomberg's Isabel Reynolds in Tokyo reports the trip revealed some differences between the president and the prime minister.
Prime Minister Shinzo Abe treated him to golf and a ringside seat at a sumo tournament, and he was feted at a grand banquet with the new emperor, Naruhito, last night. This morning, the two leaders addressed an audience of Japanese and U.S. troops together, a first for the two countries. Differences between Abe and Trump did emerge over trade talks and North Korean missiles in a press conference on Monday. But the premier seems to have achieved his goal of staying in the president's good graces as he prepares for a July election. In Tokyo, Isabel Reynolds, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Japanese Prime Minister Abe says he's outraged after a fatal stabbing spree near Tokyo. Authorities say a man with a knife attacked schoolgirls waiting at a bus, including 16 people, and left three dead, including himself. Four people near Dayton, Ohio, their lives were upended overnight as Dayton and Montgomery County fire and EMS responders were busy.
Tornado-type damage, multiple structures collapsed on Copper Smith, one victim trapped.
Audio courtesy of Broadcastify, as witnesses say entire neighborhoods are destroyed by a fierce tornado. Severe weather also hit central Indiana last night. The Midwest has been plagued by storms and flooding. A Colorado climber has died shortly after getting to the top of Mount Everest and achieving his dream of scaling the highest peaks on the seven continents. Christopher Kulish, who was an attorney in Boulder, died at a camp below the summit during his descent. His brother says Kulish, who was 62, had just reached the top of Everest with a small group of crowds of hundreds of climbers congesting at the peak last week. About a half dozen climbers died on Everest, including a Utah resident last week. Millions of air passengers during this year's peak travel season could have a rough summer. The U.S. carriers trade group, Airlines for America, estimates that a record 257.4 million people will fly from June 1st to the end of August, the 10th consecutive summer increase. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Hi, Michael. Thank you. It's 5:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
Nathan, Cy Young winners faced off in L.A. Neither Jacob deGrom or Clayton Kershaw with his best stuff. deGrom labored through five innings, but left with a 3-2 lead in the bullpen, then imploded. Dodgers, with six in the sixth, went on to beat the Mets 9-5. Three L.A. home runs, including Cody Bellinger's major league leading 19th Met home runs from J.D. Davis and Adani Echevarria. So after a good homestand, not a good start to the road trip, Yankees had the great road trip and a positive start to the homestand. Beat the Padres in the holiday matinee at Stadium 5-2. Home runs by Brett Gardner, Clint Frazier, Gary Sanchez, Chad Green started, pitched just the first inning. Yanks are 3-0, and using the opener system, the bullpen followed, and Aroldis Chapman got the save. Bill Buckner died at the age of only 69. He had over 2,700 career hits, unfortunately known mostly for letting Mookie Wilson's dribbler go through his legs. 10th inning, Game 6 of the 1986 World Series at Shea Stadium. In Boston last night, Bruins and Blues began the Stanley Cup Final. 2-2, third period.
Chara flips one, then shrugged down off of Bennington. Strathmore there. Station break, Corrales scores!
NBC calling the Sean Corrales goal. Bruins spotted St. Louis a 2-0 lead. Came back to win 4-2. Eight straight Stanley Cup playoff wins for Corrales and the Bruins.
This thing isn't over until that last whistle. I don't care if you're up, 10 goals in the last game, up 3-0, you're not done. So we're up 1-0 right now, and we're going to aim to be 2-0. It'll be a heck of a game, too, I know that.
Could be another championship in Boston. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
All right, John, thank you. In other news, Sports Illustrated is being sold to Authentic Brands for $110 million. Authentic plans to make money from the deal, licensing out the SI name. Sports Illustrated's current owner, Meredith, will continue to publish the print edition of the magazine and run its website for at least 2 years. Futures pointing to a lower open as we head back from the long holiday weekend. S&P futures are down 5 points right now. Dow futures down 22. NASDAQ futures down 7 points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Good Tuesday morning. Coming up to 5:12 on Wall Street, Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by National Realty. NRIA, developers of high-return income-producing properties for investor partners. See them at NRIA.net.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
Moscow. European stocks and U.S. stock index futures are falling as traders return from U.S. and U.K. holidays and take a cautious outlook. 10-year Treasury yields falling to their lowest level since October 2017 as the securities return to trading hours after President Trump declared that the U.S. was not ready to reach a trade deal with China. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 4.5 points. Dow futures down 19. NASDAQ futures down 5. DAX in Germany is down 0.25%. 10-year Treasury up 11/32nds, yield 2.28%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.14%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.9% or 50 cents to $59.13 a barrel. COMEX gold little change at $12.89 an ounce. The euro 1.1191 against the dollar. The yen 109.28. And today we get a report on home prices from S&P CoreLogic Case Shiller out at 9 o'clock Wall Street time. Consumer confidence is out at 10. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. President Trump and the First Lady departed from Washington today after a four-day state visit in Tokyo. But the trip wasn't without controversy. The president praised North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, and while on foreign soil, sided with Kim over former U.S. Vice President Joe Biden when Kim said Biden is a low IQ individual. The National Weather Service confirms a large and destructive tornado touched down near Dayton, Ohio overnight. At least 75 homes were damaged and entire neighborhoods were destroyed. In the NHL Stanley Cup Final, the Bruins won Game 1, beating the Blues 4-2. In baseball, the Yankees won. The Mets lost. The Red Sox were winners, along with the Orioles and A's. The Nationals lost. And sad news in baseball, Red Sox first baseman Bill Buckner has died. His solid career was overshadowed by a crushing error that cost the Red Sox Game 6 of the 1986 World Series against the Mets. Bill Buckner was 69. Global news 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts. in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thank you, Michael. It is 519 on Wall Street and live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Our guest this morning, Michael Bell, Global Market Strategist at J.P. Morgan Asset Management. Nice to talk with you, Mike, as we come back from a long holiday weekend in the U.S., and it appears American investors are back in sell-off mode. What do you see driving sentiment this morning?
I think markets are just cautious about the risk coming from the trade disruption. You've had a slowdown in global trade over the last 18 months or so. So this next bout of concern around trade is starting from a weaker point than it was back at the beginning of 2018. And I think that's making investors somewhat nervous about the potential for the weakness in trade and that being reflected in weaker business investment globally, whether or not that's going to spill across into labor markets. So when you look at Europe, for example, you've seen the employment component of the manufacturing PMI now dip below 50 into territory consistent with contraction. So I think that investors are just starting to worry that the weakness in global trade, if it spills across into jobs, could start to have a negative impact for the economy.
Is Europe a hedge against a U.S.-China trade war?
I don't think so, unfortunately. I think that the best hedge is in the form of U.S. treasuries, which is why you're seeing demand for treasuries with bond yields falling there. Because in a scenario where trade concerns escalate further and the feedback loop from the hit to growth coming into weaker jobs, what you would expect is for the Fed to be cutting rates in that scenario. European equities, unfortunately, are exposed to the same kind of tensions. So you see, as I said, the employment component of the manufacturing PMI in negative territory. If you look at the investment goods new orders component of the Eurozone manufacturing PMIs, they're at very weak levels, way below 50. So it's showing you that businesses in the Eurozone are also being impacted by this uncertainty and much less willing to invest.
How much impact will the results of the European election have on business sentiment?
Well, I think on the plus side, if you look at it from a Eurozone perspective, there weren't more significant gains than had been expected for the populist parties. I think if you look in places like France and Germany, where support for the euro remains very strong, the implications are pretty minimal. When it comes to Italy, the strong showing from the Lega Nord could potentially lead to them feeling like it makes sense to abandon the current coalition government and head for an election at some point later this year. So that could have some impact going forward in terms of the uncertainty around the Italian political picture. In the UK, what I would point out is that even though the Brexit Party did very well in these elections, if you look at the exit polls and the intentions in terms of what people wanted who were voting, what you see is that still 46% of people who voted in the European elections from the UK were in favour of remaining in the EU, compared with only 27% of people who want to leave the EU without a deal. So I think that it would be a mistake to read from the strong support for the Brexit Party that there's a majority in the UK in favour of leaving the EU without a deal. I think that's simply not the case.
With that said, what implications do the strong showing for the Brexit Party have moving forward for the pound and for the leadership contest that's coming up in Britain in a few weeks?
I think the pound is likely to remain volatile over the coming months. It's hard to know the timing around how this all plays out. I think what it will do is mean that you will see some of the contenders for the Conservative Party leadership espousing a somewhat more pro-hard Brexit view in public. But I think that there is realism amongst many of those potential candidates that a no-deal exit from the EU would most likely cause a recession in the UK and would definitely put a hard border in Ireland. And therefore, when push comes to shove, I don't believe that any of the most likely candidates for the leadership will pursue a no-deal once they're actually elected into the position. And so, as I say, I think the end game here is that that we're not going to end up with a no-deal Brexit.
All right, Michael Bell, global market strategist, JP Morgan Asset Management. Always good to get your insights. Thanks for being here with us on Bloomberg Daybreak. Coming up to 5:25 on Wall Street, straight ahead, more on President Trump ramping up the saber-rattling with China as he leaves a four-day state visit with Japan. This is Bloomberg. And it's brought to you by Withum, a forward-thinking, technology-driven advisory and accounting firm helping clients be in a position of strength in today's modern business landscape. Visit Withum.com to learn more.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Eisner Amper, named Best Global Accounting Firm for the third year in a row by Hedgeweek, a leading hedge fund industry publication. Learn more at EisnerAmper.com/FS.
And we're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. stock index futures are improving a bit this morning now, little changed, while stocks in Europe are lower. Treasury yields are at a 19-month low as traders return from U.S. and U.K. holidays. Right now, S&P futures are down 2 points. They're little changed.
Stocks in Asia posted modest gains as the U.S.-China stalemate over trade shows no sign of easing, and President Trump signals he's in no rush to reach a deal.
I think they probably wish they made the deal that they had on the table before they tried to renegotiate it. They would like to make a deal. We're not ready to make a deal.
And we get more now from Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Brian Curtis in Hong Kong.
President Trump says China probably wishes it had made the deal earlier when it was on the table. He says U.S. tariffs could go up substantially very easily. China's response is now, we think we can handle it. Guo Shuqing, China's banking and insurance regulator, says higher tariffs will have only a very limited impact and will hurt the U.S. about as much as China. In Hong Kong, I'm Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Brian. Meanwhile, the founder and CEO of Huawei is striking a defiant tone in face of the U.S. sanctions. Ren Zhengfei spoke exclusively to Bloomberg through an interpreter.
If the U.S. imposes further restrictions on us, we'll reduce our purchases from the U.S. and use more of our own chips. If American companies have permission from Washington to sell to us, we'll continue to buy from them.
The U.S. has blacklisted Huawei, which it accuses of aiding Beijing in espionage, and cut it off from U.S. software and components needed to make its products.
In the UK, Nigel Farage is the big winner in European parliamentary elections. His Brexit party wants to take the country out of the European Union without negotiating a deal.
Bloomberg News has learned Deutsche Bank is considering options, including a capital increase. It's part of a wider overhaul the lender plans to unveil in the next 2 months.
And it'll be the third mega merger of the year in the payments industry. Sources tell Bloomberg that Global Payments has agreed to buy Total System Services in a deal valued at $21.5 billion. The all-stock transaction will be announced today. Right now, S&P futures are down about 4 points. Dow futures are down 5, and NASDAQ futures are little changed. The DAX in Germany is down 0.25%. 10-year Treasury up 11/32nds, yield 2.28%, yield on the 2-year 2.14%. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
All right, thank you, Karen. It's 5:33 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr is here to tell us more of what's happening in the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. President Donald Trump rallied U.S. and Japanese troops to wrap up a four-day state visit to Tokyo. On a trip where no major agreement was reached, Trump's statements were persistently at odds with the Japanese. Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe and Trump's National Security Advisor John Bolton have both warned that North Korea's missile launches violated a UN Security Council resolution. President Trump publicly contradicted that. The president also participated in a Memorial Day event with troops on board the USS Wasp.
I have to wish you all a very happy Memorial Day, right? Memorial Day, very special back home.
President Trump also says he's aiming to reach a trade deal by August, while Japanese officials said there was no such talk. One adult and one school child are dead, and many others wounded in a mass stabbing in Kawasaki, Japan. Bloomberg's Brian Fowler has more from nearby Tokyo.
A man wielding two knives attacked a group of people waiting at a bus stop just outside Tokyo, wounding at least 19. 13 of the victims were schoolgirls at a nearby Catholic school. A 39-year-old man and a sixth grade girl died from their wounds, and the suspect died after slashing his own neck. Although Japan has one of the lowest crime rates in the world, it has had a series of high-profile killings, including in knife attacks. In Tokyo, Brian Fowler, Bloomberg Daybreak.
The Ohio State Department is using snow plows to remove debris off a state highway after a large and dangerous tornado hit near Dayton overnight. Blake Gifford had just arrived back at his church from a holiday weekend trip as the storm rolled in and took shelter. He came out after the storm to see the church was heavily damaged in the tornado, but he and the rest of his group were unharmed.
We see our church steeple ripped off. As soon as I saw the damage, I realized how blessed we were to still be here.
Severe weather has been plaguing parts of the Central Plains and Midwest. Facebook top executives Mark Zuckerberg and Sheryl Sandberg will not attend a hearing in Ottawa later this week, despite receiving summonses from the Canadian Parliament. An international committee is examining Silicon Valley's impact on privacy and democracy. Global News 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Back to John Stashire.
Nathan, it's only one game in the Stanley Cup Final, but with the Bruins beating the Blues 4-2 and having now won 8 playoff games in a row, you have to think there might well be yet another championship won in Boston. St. Louis had a 2-0 lead, badly outplayed the rest of the way, outshot in the second period, 18-3. Mets lost to the Dodgers in L.A., 9-5. Clayton Kershaw got the win, no decision for Jacob DeGrom. Dodgers won it with 6 runs in the 6th inning off the Mets bullpen. Yankee bullpen pitched the entire game outstanding in a 5-2 win at the stadium over San Diego, home runs by Brett Gardner, Clint Frazier, and Gary Sanchez. For the last 33 years of Bill Buckner's life, this is what he was known for.
Can you believe this ball game at Shea?
Oh, brother.
So the winning run is at second base with 2 out, 3-2 to Mookie Wilson. Little roller up along first, behind the bag, it gets through Buckner. Here comes Knight and the Mets win it.
So unfair to blame only Buckner for costing the Red Sox their first World Series championship since 1918. Others contributed to the Met comeback. By the time of the error, the game was already tied. There was another game after that. Bill Buckner sadly passed away at the age of 69. He had been suffering from dementia. He had a great career with over 2,700 hits. Naomi Osaka has won the last two Grand Slams. She's got her first round match coming up at the French Open with the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. I'm John Stashow. Nathan?
All right, John, thank you. It's 5:37 on Wall Street. The latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now. It's the money issue with the cover on the man who knows where the wealthy hide their cash. Ben Steverman wrote the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
He looked at offshore tax shelters and he found $7.6 trillion was hidden over there in places like Switzerland. And a lot of that bank secrecy has gone away. But then what he ended up doing was coming to the United States, and he's now a professor at Berkeley. And he's really thrown himself into the inequality debate here.
You can read more about it and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now. And listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time on Bloomberg Radio. Coming up to 5:38 on Wall Street, time for the Tri-State Business Report with Bloomberg's Ed Khoury. Good morning, Ed.
Hi, Nathan. After walking away from a deal to build a headquarters on the Queens waterfront in Long Island City, Amazon's again shopping for office space on Manhattan's West Side. Sources tell the New York Post Amazon is in talks with the newly built One Manhattan West and its upcoming sister project, Two Manhattan West. New Jersey will soon become the first state to require certain businesses to offer employees tax-favored transportation benefits. It'll require employers with 20 or more workers to offer them a chance to make pre-tax selections from their pay to cover qualifying vehicle and public transit costs. About 5 million Americans move from one state to another every year, and some states are clearly making out better than others. Connecticut, New York, and New Jersey face some of the biggest financial drains, according to a Bloomberg analysis. Florida and South Carolina enjoyed the top economic gains. That's the Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Nathan?
Thanks, Ed. Coming up to 5:39 on Wall Street Now, Bloomberg Radio is on the air. From San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong, let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Steve Potaskin on KNX in Los Angeles. We're talking about Tesla pricing its made-in-China Model 3s.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and on WBBM in Chicago, corn futures surged to the highest level in almost 3 years as rains and flooding cause further disruption to planting.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KFAB in Omaha. Iowa's Meredith has sold Sports Illustrated to Authentic Brands.
I'm Anna Edwards on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're following Michael Gove's plan to pledge free UK citizenship for 3 million EU nationals if he becomes Prime Minister.
I'm Andrew O'Day on 1010 Winds in New York. I'm reporting on a survey of consultants naming New York the world's preeminent financial center again.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting shares of Nissan are higher after Fiat Chrysler says it's seeking a merger with Renault.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Another story we're watching this morning, on the economic front, we get the Conference Board's Consumer Confidence Index at 10 a.m. Wall Street time. Bloomberg's Vinny Del Giudice reports.
April's Consumer Confidence Index rose to 129.2, edging closer to an almost two-decade high set last October. Households turned more optimistic about present and future conditions. We could see more strength in today's data for May, but the outlook is fuzzy. Trade tensions between the U.S. and China are a wild card for the economy. Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Vinny, thank you. Futures little changed at the moment. This is Bloomberg. Coming out to 5:41 on Wall Street, Alibaba is considering a deal that would bring China's largest company closer to investors in its home country. We'll get Bloomberg Opinion's take on that straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and European stocks and U.S. stock index futures are moving lower. They did recover some ground earlier, now lower again as traders return from U.S. and U.K. holidays and take a more cautious outlook. 10-year Treasury yields falling to their lowest level since October 2017. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures down about 4 points, Dow futures down 9, NASDAQ futures down 2.5, the DAX in Germany's down 0.25%. 10-year Treasury up 10 32nd yield 2.28%, yield on the 2-year 2.14%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.9% or 50 cents to $59.13 a barrel. COMEX gold, little change, down 70 cents to $12.88.50 an ounce. The euro, 1.1194 against the dollar. The yen, 109.32. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, a man in his 30s and one school child are dead and many others wounded in a mass stabbing at a bus stop in Kawasaki, Japan today. Police said a male suspect in his 50s approached with two knives and began the attack as the girls boarded the bus. Authorities say the suspect, with possibly self-inflicted wounds, later died. President Donald Trump is returning to the U.S. after a four-day trip to Japan. President Trump met Japan's new emperor and held serious discussions with Prime Minister Shinzo Abe about North Korea, Iran, and trade. In the NHL Stanley Cup Final, the Bruins won Game 1, beating the Blues 4-2. In baseball, the Yankees won, the Mets lost. The Red Sox were winners, along with the Orioles and A's. The Nationals lost. And sad news in baseball, Red Sox first baseman Bill Buckner died of dementia. His solid career was overshadowed by a crushing error that cost the Red Sox Game 6 of the 1986 World Series against the Mets. Bill Buckner was 69. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Mike Lubar. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right. Thank you, Michael. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, where it's 5:49 on Wall Street. Time to check in with Bloomberg Opinion, our platform offering informed perspectives on a range of global topics and expert data-driven commentary on breaking news. Bloomberg Opinion editor Jennifer Ryan is back with us in our London bureau. Nice to talk with you, Jen. And we've been talking this morning a bit about Alibaba thinking about raising $20 billion through a secondary listing. Tim Culpin and Nisha Gopalan write that this idea of a second IPO in Hong Kong is huge. Well, yeah, I mean, $20 billion, right?
It's a lot of money from what I get, from what I understand.
So but what are they saying? I guess is what I'm asking.
Yeah, well, there's a couple elements here. So first of all, Alibaba's handing a major coup to Hong Kong, which is where obviously the secondary listing will take place. It's still pretty sore from missing out on the biggest IPO in history. And it's also a major boost to Beijing because given the trade spat, having its pride and joy trade on a foreign bourse isn't really a good look these days.
But I mean, Alibaba's already one of China's biggest, if not China's biggest company. Does it really need an extra $20 billion?
Well, let's think about why it might want to do this to start with. And there's a really important political consideration here. If it comes closer to home, Alibaba shows Beijing where its loyalties lie, and authorities can now revel in what they see as an example of China's growing power. So Culpin and Gopalan say that you can kind of imagine the state media editorials crowing about this evidence of the U.S. decline. But the authors also say that Beijing isn't the only consideration, because trading in Hong Kong is going to provide a buffer if its New York-listed shares fall victim to global anxiety about U.S.-China tensions. So Hong Kong and mainland investors are likely to remain more positive towards Alibaba. I mean, they use their products every day. So this could put a floor under the company's American depository receipts.
Okay, but I mean, is politics all there is to this? Or is there a real reason why Alibaba would want this extra money? What would it do with this extra money?
Well, among the most obvious things it could do would be to buy back SoftBank's stake in Alibaba, which is valued at around $12 billion. This would be a big favor to Masayoshi Son, since SoftBank is trading at a pretty big discount to book value, and it also has a ton of debt to service. This kind of a deal might include Alibaba becoming a cornerstone investor in Sun's forthcoming SoftBank Vision Fund 2. And then there's also plenty of unicorns to chase, notably in Southeast Asia. So there's plenty of good reasons for a Hong Kong IPO. It would be almost ridiculous for Alibaba not to do it.
All right. It'll be interesting to see whether Alibaba goes through with the plan. In the meantime, let's move on to Therese Raphael and her take on the European parliamentary elections with the headline, Boris and Corbyn are on very dangerous ground. Obviously, parties favoring a Britain that stays in the EU did well in the parliamentary elections. What does Therese Raphael say we should conclude from this?
Let's take a little bit of a closer look at the results. So obviously the Liberal Democrats in the UK have risen from the ashes and won just over 20% of the vote with a really Remain campaign. The other friendly Remain parties, including the Greens and the Scottish National Party, once you add up their results altogether, you've got nearly 40% of the vote was in favor of staying in the EU. Now compare that to the 35% that was gathered by Nigel Farage's Brexit party. What does this really show us? That there's no center in British politics when it comes to Brexit. Instead of the old left-right distinctions that allowed the two big parties to dominate, you'll have noticed that I did not mention the Conservative or the Labour Party in my rundown of the results.
Yeah, I did. So, I mean, where does this leave the Tories now?
Well, it's likely that members will sort of rack this, you know, add this into May's growing list of failures. I mean, the 9% showing is nothing really to write home about. And the Brexit Party's success is proof that they need to make a quick exit from the EU. This increases the chances that the party's new leader will support leaving without a deal if that is the only way to exit by October 31st. That's when the current Brexit extension period ends. Raphael says this is going to be a really risky move for an unelected head of a minority government to take, especially given that more than 9 million people just voted against a no-deal exit compared to less than 6 million for it.
Well, what about putting a no-deal Brexit before voters? Is there a chance for that?
And of course, that's an option, but it's going to be hardly more specific than the original leave option. I mean, there is an advantage to so stark a choice, is that a no-deal exit might scare enough people to tip the balance towards Remain. The broader picture here is that Britain's two-party system has been stretched to the breaking point, and none of the smaller parties are likely to be able to form a governing majority under the current electoral rules. So Raphael says it's still the big tent parties, Labour and the Conservative, who must respond to the challenge laid down by voters last week, or else they need to break up so that other groupings can gain critical mass. And how is that going to happen? Either with a general election or another referendum.
Bloomberg Opinion editor Jennifer Ryan, nice to have you back. We can read more of these and other stories from Bloomberg Opinion at Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN Go on the Bloomberg Terminal. Karen.
Nathan, thank you. It is 5:54 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg Law Report. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Steve Podisk in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington Newsroom.
The Nonpartisan Center for Climate and Energy Solutions says cutting U.S. emissions to near net zero by mid-century will require an all-out effort, with companies and consumers playing a critical role alongside the federal and state governments. The largest privately owned wholesale drug distributor in the country, Morrison Dixon, will pay the U.S. government $22 million to resolve claims that it failed to report suspicious opioid orders. And Florida tomato growers have rejected Mexican competitors' latest effort to resolve a dispute with the Trump administration over anti-dumping concerns.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
Steve, thank you. Now another legal story we're watching this morning. The U.S. charging WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange with 17 counts of violating the Espionage Act. It's reigniting a debate over whether Assange is being punished for activities protected by the First Amendment. For more on this story, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to Fordham Law School professor Andrew Kent.
Andrew, this is a novel use of the espionage. Will it stand up in court?
I think it probably will, although I think there are reasons to be concerned about it.
Let's talk about the reasons to be concerned about it. The head of the Justice Department's National Security Division said that Assange is no journalist. Can you draw a legal distinction between what Assange did and what other news organizations do?
You know, that's really the $100,000 question or whatever you want to call it, June. It's very difficult, although, you know, perhaps recently Assange has made it somewhat less difficult in a variety of ways. So previously, when he was just disclosing information and kind of remaining in the background, he might have looked very much like just a publisher of information. But as he's been, you know, cooperating with the Russian intelligence, et cetera, it could be easier for prosecutors to show that he's acting with a purpose to harm the United States that an ordinary journalist, of course, would not have.
Does this establish a precedent? I take it that that's one of the things that news organizations and defenders of the First Amendment are worried about.
Again, it depends a bit on what the government proves and what a court requires the government to prove. A court could interpret the statute to require a showing that Assange acted, you know, with some bad purpose to harm the United States, harm the security of the United States. I think if it does that, then it's not as much of a precedent because, as I said, journalists generally, you know, do not act with that purpose at all. They act with the purpose of informing the public. If the government does not have to prove that, if the court doesn't require them to, then it is a broader precedent and raises more concerns.
And that's Fordham Law School professor Andrew Kent speaking to Bloomberg's June Grasso. You can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio. And find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com for more information. Right now, S&P futures are down 3 points. Dow futures down 5. NASDAQ futures, little change. 10-year Treasury up 10/32nds, yield 2.28%. And the yield on the 2-year, 2.14%. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.